Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast for another episode of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and it has been a while since my dulcet tones have been gracing your very eardrums. But boy, do we have some things that have gone on in the Premier League since we've been gone. We've got a lot to dive into, and of course, we will be providing some top-notch commentary across the board on that. But first, we've got some administrative work to attend to, namely in the form of introducing my fine friends this afternoon. We are joined first and foremost by Ethan. Ethan, did you have a good weekend?
I did a lot. I mean, it was pretty busy, a lot of work, but I'm glad to be finally doing the podcast again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's good to be back. We're also joined, of course, by Josh. Josh, who's freshly awakened from a nap. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am, well, as far as the subject material is concerned, I've had better days, and I suspect you probably have too, but nevertheless, we must soldier on, as is our requirement. But we must also make this journey without the presence of Reese, as he spent the weekend out of town and now has some other business to attend to now that he's back. So honestly, I couldn't be happier that he's gone.
Yeah, what's new with Arsenal?
Seeing as we're closing in on that unfortunate time where we have to sit here and listen to him wax rhapsodic about this ridiculous team that are inexplicably going to end up doing the unthinkable, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, I'm glad he's not here. Of course, always enjoy having him on, but not particularly at the moment. So let's get started with the question of the day, courtesy of Josh.
All right. Who has the best fast food chicken tender?
That's tough.
That's very tough. There's lots of options.
And I say it's tough because I feel like a lot of the places are carried by sauces. Because, like, I love Raising Cane's, but I think the sauce carries them a little bit.
Yeah, I would kind of agree.
They're just homemade in a 5-gallon bucket every day.
The sauce or the chicken?
The sauce, I don't know how they batter their chicken. They just have chickens just popping eggs out in a bucket all day.
No, obviously. I meant I didn't know if they like basted the chicken in a 5-gallon bucket or something like that.
I don't know. I know that they have like drills. Someone on the football team in high school worked at Canes. They have like a drill with a whisk on the end they put in the 5-gallon bucket to make the sauce.
I'm going to steal one of those buckets.
Innovation that excites, dude. Whisk drills.
Man, a tough question, Josh.
It is a tough question because I feel like I also don't ever order chicken tenders at a fast food place. Not because I don't like chicken tenders, but just because there's always something I would rather have than chicken tenders. You know,
yeah. Like
it's not going to be a purpose-built fast food chicken or purpose-built chicken tender place. Mine is going to be Whataburger. Their breading is always amazing. You got lots of sauces in the game. Their chicken tenders are pretty good.
I know this place is not too, you know, spread out. It's only like in a few places, but I'm a big fan of Slim Chickens. They've got good sauces, good tenders. I also like Zaxby's a lot, but they're also not very, you know, prominent in other areas. So, yeah.
Well, it's very prominent in the South. I will say Slim Chickens is the closest you can get to Chili's chicken, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Which are amazing.
Very true.
I'm like really struggling with this, dude, because I can't remember the last time I just ordered chicken. I mean, I guess Cane's. I always get chicken because that's just kind of what you get at Cane's. But I don't really know. I've actually never had a chicken item from the menu at Whataburger, just because I would literally always rather have an actual Whataburger than any of the chicken items on the menu, which I think is controversial, actually. But
I think it is. Whataburger has great. I think Whataburger's menu is what like carries them, because they have so much good stuff. But I think their chicken's better than their burgers.
I can understand that.
I can't even make a comment because I literally don't think I've ever had a chicken item from their menu.
You need to have for dinner tonight instead of a ham sandwich.
Maybe. I did state that I was going to have a ham sandwich. Although the amount of money I spent on food this weekend is already eclipsing what is rational for a human being. So we'll see. Depending on how hungry I am at the end of the show, I might go grab something from Whataburger, but I'm going to have to go with Cane's just because that's the only chicken tenders I've had from a from a fast food place. But
have you never had the tenders at Zaxby's?
No, I always get the boneless wings combo, dude. I also have this really unfortunate trait where I'm a creature of habit, and once I find something I like on the menu, that's the only thing I ever order. I don't ever order anything different. Like, and it's not because I don't like other foods. It's just because I don't know. I'm just a creature of habit, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of that way too, and I'm mostly like that with like chain restaurants. Like, I'll get the same thing at like Chili's or
yeah.
Actually, I was about to say B-Dubs, but I have been trying new sauces and flavors. So yeah, I am like you in that sense.
I feel like B-Dubs is really easy to try new stuff though.
Yeah, I recently tried the new sauces that they have, like the honey garlic and buffalo ranch. But I also tried Nashville Hot, and I thought it was fun.
How was the Buffalo Ranch?
It was good. I probably wouldn't get it again, but I would liked it a lot.
I heard the other one was really good.
Yeah, the other one is really good. Reese really likes that one, but I'm going to just keep trying new sauces.
Mm-hmm. I need to go have those, dude, because now I can no longer say I've had every sauce on the menu because they added new sauces. So yeah. My favorite B-Dub sauce actually was a limited edition that they took away like maybe a year and a half ago. It's a sad story. The smoky adobo. It was even before the Doritos.
I bet that's good.
It is. It was really good, dude. But apparently nobody ordered it, so they took it off the menu. I was like the sole person at our restaurant that ever ordered it at the one in Waco. That's what the guy told me, because we used to have the same waiter every week. But
yeah,
it was fun. Yeah, and then he moved to the bar, so we didn't ever really get him in.
I just got to
the bar. Yeah,
I know. We should have. Well, we weren't 21 yet. We were all still 19, maybe younger even. I don't know. But either way, we must now leave behind our chicken tender exploits and get to the subject matter at hand. And really, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one place to begin this week, because Ethan had a moment that was so prophetic on accident last week last episode that I mean, I've never seen the likes of this before. So Ethan, please tell everyone what happened.
Okay. So to recap our previous episode, I was going into detail about how I am Vera out. You know, I think it was time, you know, as much as I wanted to work, it didn't, and so forth. I went on to say, we need a manager that's Roy-like, which is very controversial, and it's very contradictory to what I've said in the past. I was mainly saying that we needed someone who has had Premier League experience and had had, you know, a solid game plan, even if it's not one that, you know, we're particularly interested in doing it. But we ended up hiring Roy. Roy is the most Roy-like. And God said, oh, I heard Roy. And so we ended up hiring Roy Hodgson again. And I really thought this was the end of the world. And I was going through my old tweets talking about how I was like rid of Roy Hodgson because like we had beaten them when he was at Watford, and I thought we were done for good, but no, he's back for round two. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but it's been an interesting few weeks for sure.
Off to a good start.
I was going to say, listen, as far as, I mean, the results are concerned, he managed to win a game for the first time this year.
Yeah. So. Dominate a game.
Yeah, I will say that's first half. I'll try not to gush too much because respect. But the we had a freak of nature performance in the first half. I think the total amount throughout the game ended up being 31 attempts on goal, which is insane for us. That is something you do not see a lot, especially from us. So I was really happy that, you know, we immediately attacked on the front foot. You know, it was very non-Roy-like, but I'll take it considering that, you know, we didn't look a shred of that when we were under Vieira. So, and part of me was like, you know, we're going to be playing more defensive and it's not going to be like how Vieira had it set up, but that was not the case at all. And I was, you know, it's hard to like, you know, from an outside perspective, people are talking about like, oh, Vieira had y'all in 12th and, you know, it was too harsh, and Arsenal fans were up in arms about it because, you know, he's their man. He was their captain at one point, right?
Yeah, when they won the when they were the Invincibles, yeah.
Yeah, so they were really passionate about that. But Listen, we were literally going four or five months without, or with five goals, and we hadn't won a game. So, you know, you can't go on like that thinking, you know, everything's going to turn around. Because like teams have been getting points against top half teams, and we just haven't been doing that. So we just needed to change. And begrudgingly, it was Roy, but I think we're on the right path now. Another thing that happened in that game is that Wilf came off with an injury, a groin injury. So I was really disappointed about that. But it was funny because there's a funny story with this game in that I was texting my dad, and I had work that day. I had to be in at 11, and it was around 10:45-ish when it was like the 82nd minute, and I had to leave. So I was like, okay, I'll just try and get it on my phone. I couldn't get it on my phone. And so I was just like, well, it's 1-1. Knowing Palace, we'll probably keep a draw, or let alone Leicester are going to score and I'm going to be pissed. So I'll just be fine without watching it. I'm pulling up to the stadium where I'm working, and I look at my phone and I see that it's 2-1. And I'm like, I'm not even happy right away. I'm pissed because I had missed it. And so everyone's texting me, was like, oh, that was the best end of the game we've had in a while. And I was like, I didn't see it. So, you know, I'm very happy with the win. But, you know, we'll see how we do going forward against these other teams around us, and if Zaha will be back, and if, you know, Roy can keep it up.
You know what I found to be most incredible about this game? That Roy Hodgson, of all people, is the manager who comes in and starts the following players all at the same time. Edouard, Zaha, Olise, and Eze all on the pitch at the same time.
And at the right positions.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
I know. I thought I was going to see none of those players on the pitch at the same time.
And remarkably, like Jordan Ayew not starting the game.
I know.
I can't believe that.
And, you know, I looked and saw Schlupp starting, and I was like, well, I can't have everything, you know. But he actually looked good. He was linking up well with Zaha at many times. So I was really happy with his performance. Eze was crazy. He was dodging everybody. But, yeah, I was really happy with it, and I'm glad he's using his brain for once, from what's left of it, what's left of his brain.
Josh, do you have any anything you'd like to state about Leicester? I mean,
the
unfortunate thing about the game is that immediately after y'all scored to take the lead, you give up a freak equalizer, one of these bar down, off the goalkeeper, own goals type situations.
It wasn't even like a hard shot either. It was a pretty weak shot. Yeah. I don't really have anything about the game. It's more about like state of the club. But
yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's a good segue into the other, well, one of the four sackings that we're going to talk about.
Happened today, right?
Yeah, this morning. I think even there it was still morning. Rodgers got sacked, and the statement from the club is probably the worst thing I've ever seen. They said something along the lines that they thought he was going to be able to steer the club straight, just as he had done before. And it was like, okay, but like, why is the bell ringing now after, like, we've lost four of our last five
and haven't won a game?
Yeah, we haven't won since February, and it's like, okay, well, we're 19th now, and had Southampton won, we would have been 20th. It doesn't make any sense. Why this happened now and not during one of the two other four game losing streaks this season? So we've won two games since the World Cup. I think it's 8 points. Like, it doesn't make any sense why we're doing this now and not like in before the World Cup, where we only had two players go. We would have had time for a new manager to come in and like actually influence the club. And it's like, okay, this is just a stupid waste of time for the last 3 months. And now we're in 19th. Now if we win against Villa next week or midweek, we can go to 13th, depending on the results around this, which is great. But then it's like, well, shit, now we are still this far behind everybody else, and we need to win, and we haven't won since we smashed Tottenham, and it's frustrating. Which, like, smashing Tottenham, like, yes, that's just like saying it, but that's like an actual, like, important thing to like talk about. Like, the last
I was rolling my eyes at Spurs, not at you.
The last win we had was against like a top four normally club, and it, yeah, I don't know. We have two chances. We have Villa, and then we have Bournemouth. But last time we played Villa, we smashed them. Bournemouth last time, I think we lost. I don't remember of the result. I think
I remember making fun of you for that too, so I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah, we lost. Daka scored in the first 10 minutes, and then they scored two within five in October. So we'll see. We have two very good chances to like right the ship, but it's going to be very interesting to see if we can. I think it's really going to be dependent on who we get in, or if we just use current assistants who have been at the club for a very long time, like when Craig Shakespeare took over for Ranieri and steered the ship right whenever we were the last time before this season we were in the relegation zone.
But he ended up getting the job permanently, right?
Yeah, and then I think he got sacked a year and a half later, and we got Puel. But I don't know. We will see. It's a very quick turnaround. We play on Tuesday against Villa.
Yeah, so that'll be one to keep an eye on for sure. I mean, at this moment, if you had to put a percentage chance on y'all getting relegated, what would you say?
I think it'd be like a 45% chance. I don't think it's quite like a shoo-in yet. Yeah. But we will see.
I still maintain that there are teams that are worse than Leicester. Like, yeah, there's at least three teams that are worse than Leicester.
I agree, but we're not playing like there's three worse teams, which is, yeah, does not matter if you're not playing like it.
No, I agree, but I'm saying I think the potential is there, at least. Like, whereas for Southampton, I have zero hope whatsoever. I think their chances of relegation are somewhere up in the 80% range.
And I mean, these last few games are going to be like, it's going to amplify teams, and you know, we're getting close to that point, but like, it's really going to come down to these last few games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when we have Bournemouth, we will see.
Yeah. I mean, those games against the teams around you are some of the most key fixtures to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. So I would imagine for Tuesday and probably next Saturday, we'll probably have Adam Sadler, who filled in whenever we sacked Puel before Rodgers, and I think he managed one or two games. I think he's still at the club, or he should be. But yeah, it's interesting. It'll be an interesting few weeks. Really just an interesting week. We'll see next Sunday what this looks like.
So you mentioned about Villa being your next game. Let's talk about Villa's last game quickly, because it's actually has bigger implications for Chelsea than it does for Aston Villa. But of course, Villa put in what I could only describe as a very turgid, stolid performance against Chelsea and came away 2-0 winners at Stamford Bridge. Ollie Watkins and John McGinn, the scorers. I saw a stat somewhere that after the Ollie Watkins goal went in, Villa only created 0.04 XG worth of chances, and that includes the goal that John McGinn scored. So it's a tough result to take for Chelsea in terms of the fact that they played well enough to create chance. I mean, the reality is they had enough chances in this game to win. Even with Villa scoring two goals, I think they had enough chances to win. They just lack that clinical punch right at the moment, and things just refuse to line up. I mean, I'm thinking especially of that one where Mudryk was through one-on-one with the keeper and mailed it. I mean, so the crucial news that's come out of this game, of course, is that the probably inevitable at this point sacking of Graham Potter has officially gone through today, the day after the game. Let's talk about this, because this is kind of an interesting position for Chelsea to be in, I suppose. So I want to ask both of you, would you have sacked Potter, yes or no, first of all?
I mean, when you think about it, it's like, first of all, I don't think it's his fault at all.
I agree.
I think it's the fucking board. I'm passionate about this. It's the board's fault that that they've signed so many players to a point where it's just a big cluster of weird players, you know. So it's a lot to deal with, and I don't think it's really his fault that they're performing the way they are.
I don't think it's an easy question, because like, if we were
not at all.
If we were in the position to make the decision, then we wouldn't have allowed, or we wouldn't have signed this many people.
Yeah.
Right.
But I probably would, just because there's not really much you could do about the players. At some point, you just have to like try something else.
I wouldn't have, because there's not, what's it going to save for this season? Like, they're probably not going to make it into Europe unless they win. They were knocked out of the gym. No. Are they through in the Champions League?
I don't remember, dude. Hold on. Let me check. I don't think they are, but maybe I'm tripping. Oh, yes, they are. They beat Dortmund.
Yeah.
They're queued up to play Real Madrid next week.
Which,
yeah, I mean, in all likelihood.
But, like, if you look at the table, they're not going to get relegated unless they just don't manage to win a game.
No, there's no way they get relegated.
Like, they're 12 points off of Champions League, which is really the only thing that should matter to them. And they're 5 points off of Brighton with two games in hand. So there's not really anything they can gain. I think it'd be a good time to like reset and allow him time to like influence players and like try and turn the ship around going towards next season, because there's only like 8 weeks, 7 weeks left of the season now.
Yeah, so I don't really understand the thought process here, because to me, it seems like when they sacked Tuchel, when they made the decision to sack Tuchel, I feel like at that point you're admitting that the season is a write-off. Like, you're admitting that in the league, you're not going to finish in your desired position. So why are you expecting, okay, I want to say results, but I mean, their results have been absolutely garbage. Let's make no bones about that. It's inexcusable for them to have the results that they have, having spent the money that they have and appointed one of the best up-and-coming managers in the Premier League, you know, all that, yada, yada. Aside from how ludicrous all that is, if you've already decided that the season's a write-off, what's the point in sacking him with 10 games to go? Because to Josh's point, what does this change? Like, I don't think this changes anything for as far as the outlook of the season is concerned. And now you're just going to have to go through the whole process again, bringing in another manager. And this time they're going to get a full preseason themselves. They'll probably sign 15 more players this summer, because of course they will. And it just doesn't make sense to me why they've decided to do it now. I mean, in all likelihood, they're going to appoint Julian Nagelsmann, which is yet another bullet to the head of Spurs fans. But do I think Nagelsmann's a better man for the job than Tuchel? I mean, not Tuchel, Potter? Yeah, probably. But I also think the position that they've put Potter in with all these signings and the demands of the board is completely untenable. I don't think almost anyone would have succeeded in those conditions. So when you bring in that number of players with that amount of ego under a manager who really relies on the cohesion of his squad and the understanding of the structure and the system, it's just illogical. I mean, it really is. They're playing football manager, and it doesn't make sense to me why they would do this now. So that's really all I have to say about it. Other than the fact that they're an actual embarrassment to the sport of football for having spent £600 million, Great British pounds, real currency, on all these players and still sitting in the bottom half of the table for the first time this late into a season since 1995, which was before they had all the money influx from Abramovich. That was when they were still mid-table Chelsea. So I just think it's a complete embarrassment from them in all aspects. Embarrassing club, embarrassing fan base, embarrassing ownership. So that's it, basically. Let's talk just briefly about them lot down the road, because they did pick up another 4-1 victory against Leeds, routine as it's turning out to be. And I honestly think here's my official take, and you guys can, you know, bat back at this if you want. They play Liverpool next weekend. Am I right in saying that, next weekend? They play Liverpool next Sunday. I am honestly in the camp now. If they win against Liverpool at Anfield, I think it's done. I think the chances of anyone else winning the title is officially zero. And I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth, but that is the unfortunate reality from my perspective anyway. So I don't know if you guys want to drop a line on Arsenal or the title race in general, but
no. It hasn't really changed since we've been here.
Yeah.
Last time we've been here.
Yeah. And I think they were able to continue to keep up their form with the likes of Jesus injured. And now he's back and he's scoring. So I think it just, you know, they're all together again and they're going to see it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I think we have to come. We'll stay in North London, much as I don't really want to, but we do have to talk about Spurs. Everything that could possibly have gone wrong for Tottenham has gone wrong in the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. We haven't even played yet at the time of recording. We play Everton tomorrow, Monday Night Football. This episode will go out the day of that game, so you'll probably listen to this after the game has taken place, but I don't really think the result matters, especially seeing as Newcastle won today. I think Spurs' chances of finishing in the top four have officially regressed to slim to none, which is, again, I think only one game has passed since the last time I said I was almost 100% confident that Spurs would finish fourth, but here we are. I don't even remember what our last game was. It was the 3-3 farcical draw against Southampton while we were at Josh's bachelor party. I'm not going to talk about that game other than to say it was a complete farce. Conte comes out afterwards and completely lambasts the club, the players in general, states that the players are selfish. They only play for themselves. It's in Spurs' nature not to play for anything big. They don't ever get themselves up for games. You know, if they 20 years they've had this owner and won nothing. Why do you think that is? All these kind of quotes. Which essentially he put the nail in his own coffin at that point, because coming out and publicly criticizing the club like that, I don't think anyone survives that, kind of regardless of his stature in football, I guess. Now I'm curious to hear the outside perspective on these quotes, especially because I know I'm so deeply rooted within the Spurs echo chamber that, like, I have all these conflicting views on it, but I'm curious to see what the outside perspective is on, you know, is he right? And should he have said those things? That's basically what I'm asking you from the outside.
I think the manager should never say those things. However, I do think he's 86% right. I didn't see the whole thing, all of the quotes, so that's why I'm sitting at 86%. But I mean, I've criticized Levy on the podcast a lot. I don't think he's a great owner. He's not, outside of one Champions League final where it was a miracle run. And then, like, what wasn't there controversy with a Sterling goal being disallowed in one of the quarterfinal legs?
It wasn't, I don't know if that was the controversy, but Llorente's goal that ended up being the winner for us was there was a handball.
So, yeah, so, like, you know, even like the biggest achievement is going to a final, and that achievement has justifiable clouds around it. So, he's not wrong, and I'm sure that's not a fun thing to hear, but, like, he's just not. It's like everything he said is not far from the truth.
Yeah, and I completely agree, because you can't say these things and then expect to have a job the next day, because that's just, I'd be like if I started talking about the college I go to and expecting to still be employed and a student here. But I guess they might not care, because I'm one person of many. But yeah, that stuff needed to be said, because I feel like it's kind of true. Not kind of, it's all true.
Yeah, so here's my official position on it, is that I actually agree with you guys in terms of the fact that he is right about this stuff, comma, however, I think the thing that really pisses me off about him specifically saying this is that during his whole tenure here, he's constantly acted like him being in the job at Spurs has been doing us a favor. Like, he is so far above the club that he, you know, like, can't even be arsed to put in the effort to help us get past that level, right? I mean, he's supposed to be the guy. Him and Mourinho were supposed to be the guys that took Spurs past this problem, right? And if he's saying that this is a squad full of selfish players who only play for themselves, like, it's one thing to say there's five or six players who are causing a problem, who are selfish and won't put in the effort in. It's another thing entirely to say the entire squad is rotten to the core. I think that there's something to be said about that, because ultimately it is the manager's role to maintain the squad and to motivate his players, right? And I'm not defending the players, because you guys know how much the players have pissed me off over the years, but go ahead, Josh.
It is his role to influence that, but he's also not the last one. Like, this has been an issue in Spurs for the last like 7 or 8 years. So like, he's absolutely probably not wrong. And like, it makes me wonder how good of a captain Kane actually is.
He's not the captain.
Who? Oh, is he not?
Hugo Lloris is club captain.
Well, then it makes
Kane,
you beg your question.
To take your point, Kane's the figurehead, emotional leader, yada yada.
But like,
that's just a pet peeve of mine.
Like, leadership players around the club, like, it makes you wonder questions. Because ever since Vertonghen, I would say those aren't true up until Vertonghen stopped playing a lot. Whenever he fell off, I think that's kind of when.
You just touched my heart. I love Super Yan, dude.
I think he's probably like the best thing that happens to y'all, to at least get y'all to a place to even look at trophies, because before it wasn't really a thought. Now that you kind of say that, like, Lloris is the captain, kind of like gets the gears turned. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of like player the who's fact overtly, that you have to explain that to everyone. It's kind of.
Yeah. Like, having to explain that, like, as part of it, and like having a player as be the captain who's overtly emotional and often causes issues within the dressing room is not somebody you really want to be your captain, at least in my opinion.
That's interesting, actually. I've never really heard him talked about in that light, but I mean, there have been examples like that, the fight between him and Sonny in the All or Nothing documentary. And
there's a difference between holding people accountable, and as a leader you have to understand that you yelling at someone after they just made a huge mistake is going to do nothing. Like, that's one of the worst things you can do as a leader, and he just personified it whenever he just comes in and starts yelling at Sonny. It's like, why? That's not going to achieve anything. What are you going to achieve after he made a mistake? You yelling at him, who he sees as a peer, is not going to help. Like, and he's overtly risky, which as a captain, you don't need someone who's going to like make stupid plays, stupid challenge. Like, he almost made France not qualify for the 2018 World Cup. Like, yeah. He was like that arrogance, Sweden. Almost like caused France to not qualify for the World Cup.
Like, yeah.
So I have questions of him.
Sure. And I think that's a perfectly fair assessment. My dad's actually kind of in the same camp, that's like, you know, we've had the same problem for so many years. Like, when is it time to just move on from all of them? Like, and it's hard. It's hard to, like, quote unquote, rebuild whenever you have players like Kane and Son in the team, because you're never going to be bad when Kane plays for you, right? Like, you're never going to be absolutely awful as long as he's in the team. So you can't really rebuild, to use it like a hockey metaphor. You can't really rebuild mm-hmm. while he's in the team. but it's this kind of catch 22. So it's like, do you just rip off the Band-Aid and move on?
Yeah.
So, again, though, I think just his attitude towards the club is what really like grates on me. I think if it were someone who like had galvanized the fans and had said, you know, I'm willing to fight for this club. And like, we have these problems, but I'm willing to stay here and fight and, you know, make a difference and try to get us back on the right path. That I will accept, but this charade about him not being too good for the club, whatever, is what I don't accept. And by the way, how many Champions League finals has he ever been to in his career? Zero. So I don't
Premier
understand.
League has he won though?
I don't care. I'm just saying, he says we don't ever play for the big occasion, and he's never been to the biggest occasion in club football. So, you know,
he hasn't, but he still won more.
I'm not questioning his credentials. I'm just saying, you know, it is kind
well,
of
also like don't hire an Italian manager if you don't want this sort of attitude. Then
no, I mean that's a whole nother discussion about the actual hiring of the manager, which
yeah, like, but if you like want like the qualities, like the anti-Conte would be like hiring the manager has the qualities of a British manager, which then go sign one. Yeah, obviously the Latin or Southern Mediterranean managers have not been working out for Tottenham.
No, yeah, and I yeah.
It's, who it's, all share the major players in soccer all share very similar cultural qualities. If it's not working, stop hiring Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian managers.
Maybe. I mean, I think the nationality brush is kind of too broad to.
I mean, it is, but then like personality wise, like they're all like generally the ones who are successful are generally abrasive people. Who passionate true. Yet abrasive leaders, and Pochettino is passionate. I wouldn't call him abrasive, but I wouldn't say he's not. He can be.
Yeah. He's Argentine, by the way, just for the record. But oh, well, Latin temperament.
He played his
way.
Whole career in Spain. So
yeah,
he,
yeah.
That's where half of the influence comes from.
No, I don't outright disagree. I don't know. It's extremely frustrating. Now, okay, so let's move on from that particular set of quotes. He's now been sacked, unsurprisingly, although it took 8 days for us to get there after the press conference. It took 8 days for the statement to officially come out, which, whatever, who knows what was going on behind the scenes. He actually wasn't officially sacked. He was parted ways in mutual consent or whatever, so Spurs don't have to pay the extra release fee or whatever, or the termination fee or whatever. Not that it really matters. What I do find a little bit odd about this whole situation is that we fired Conte, presumably. So what worries me about this is, are we firing Conte because of what he said or because the team has been dog shit? And I think it's now become because of what he said, because we have appointed his assistant and his entire staff in interim. So you've killed the man, but not the idea, basically. Is what I'm seeing. So I'm not necessarily unhappy about what happened just because I was so sick of Conte. And I understand that we're not going to give Stellini the position full time. So just as a continuity candidate till the end of the season, whatever. But it concerns me about the lack of critical thinking that goes on at the top level of Spurs. Yeah. So this is not even getting on to the fact that so I saw this stat earlier, or not a stat, but just this tweet that was like, only one club in the entire universe could achieve a position where you have no director of football, no permanent men's head coach, no permanent women's head coach, and no head director of scouting. Only Tottenham Hotspur could end up in that situation. And it's just incredible. So yeah, sporting director, Fabio Paratici. Spurs wheel out this video of him stating about how the club is going to be galvanized and we're going to go forward in this togetherness and blah, blah, blah. We have 10 games left in the season and every game is a final. And then literally not 8 hours after they released the statement, FIFA come down and say, oh, by the way, he's banned from football worldwide permanently if the appeal doesn't go through. So nice one, Spurs. You knew this was going to happen. You literally knew this was going to happen. I've known this was going to happen since December. Like, it's been reported since December that this was going to happen. How did you, how did you miss this? I don't understand. So yeah, I've been a defender, a paragon for Enoch and Levy, and in Spurs fandom, that group is becoming lesser and lesser. And honestly, these last couple weeks have demonstrated to me that the lack of critical thinking as regards the actual football side of the club. You can talk about the business side and us having the stadium and the training ground and the Beyonce concerts and this fucking F1 track that exists below the stadium now and the whatever else bullshit that we have, the boxing matches and Guns N' Roses concerts and all that dog shit, the NFL. You can talk about all that. It's been a huge hammering success. But at the very end of the day, the product that you're designing to put on display that makes you all this money in the first place, we don't have any idea what we're doing in regards to that. And that is officially starting to turn the wheels on me as far as Levy and Enoch are concerned. Because I think Pochettino was the biggest stroke of luck in like the history of ownership groups. And that's been carrying them on their coattails through the whole process of building the stadium and blah, blah, blah. So the wheels are starting to turn for me on Levy. And I never really thought we would get to this position, but then you go back and look at some of these decisions that he's made, like trying to move the club to Stratford in 2017, furloughing staff during the COVID pandemic, joining the Super League in the aftermath of whatever that bullshit was. Like, all these wrong decisions just keep happening. Oh, and by the way, we have the most expensive season ticket in the country, which is an absolute embarrassment, by the way. I would burn that stadium to the ground if I was a season ticket holder right now. But anyway, we don't need to talk about that anymore. I have gotten to the point of my mouth is dry from talking so much about it. So we're done with that. Someone else, please state something about anything.
I think that might be a good spot to end the podcast because there's not a whole lot. Aside from City smashing Liverpool, there's not a whole lot of other craziness to talk about.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the matches this week were like teams around each other playing each other, you know, Forest against Wolves, Brentford against Brighton, Newcastle against United, you know, nothing too weird happened. I guess United lost, but Newcastle is actually good this season, so it's not too much of a surprise.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge result for Newcastle, actually. I think
I agree.
It actually almost makes them favorites for third, in my opinion. I know they're in third right now, but I'm just saying I think the momentum they have going after this is going to be huge for them. Yeah. So, okay, well, I'll take a cue from Josh and go ahead and bring things to a close here. So, gentlemen, let's do the weekly segments. So, Ethan, we've got album of the week from you.
And I've got kind of a treat this week. It had been a while, so I had gotten a few records in the meantime. But this is a really cool one. It's a compilation of Japanese city pop from 1976 to 1986. It's called Pacific Breeze. And it has a really cool album cover. And the cool thing about it is that I had found this artist who made the album cover a long time ago, and I had been wanting, you know, like a poster of his or something like that in my room, and I just couldn't get it because he's so popular. But this is the next best thing because I got this, and it's really cool. It's got a lot of cool designs on it, but it's just some city pop from that time, and this is really cool. Look at that. Looks like nice. Some waves. So I found this at the local record shop and I listened to it and I just like, it just sounds so good and I can't pass it up. So they have a 1, 2, and 3. So I might have to go back and get the others, but yeah, it's really cool. And I just have it setting up against my wall and I'll put it on occasionally.
Nice.
You're up. I thought that. So for today's Jersey of the Week, I have the 2016-17 Galatasaray away jersey. This is my favorite era of like Nike, like template kits. It's the one I'm gonna try to get it close, where the color on the shoulders was from striping with white and black, and I think it was just that Puma also had the that was that season where they had the dots on the shoulder that like slowly gradiented out. I think that season was just great for concept kits as a whole, and I just especially those Nike ones. Like I have the USA black one with the red and blue stripes, and that is one of my favorites. I'm also wearing a Leicester kit. I think I have shown before. It's a Wes Morgan one. So
it's a classic.
It's a lot better than this dog shit Nike's rolling out with the like weird chest piece and the.
It's weird. I don't understand what they're doing with that, but. I'm not the if oh I want to shout out an Instagram. It's called Jersey Bird. They do like redesigns of mostly they've been doing a lot of soccer stuff just because it's been around the World Cup. I think they did some NBA stuff, but they just do some cool stuff where they would do like if we were the ones designing these uniforms, and I think you can buy them from them. We have no affiliation. I just think it's a cool account that I think y'all should go check out.
Nice. All right, folks, let's bring proceedings to a close here officially. We want to say a huge thank you to everyone for tuning in for us this week. And, of course, we want to say a thank you to Ethan for coming along.
Of course. I'm glad to be back. Hopefully we can continue to do this more often than we have been. And I appreciate you for hosting.
And, Josh, thank you for awakening from your slumber to join us.
Thank you. Sorry, we've been out because of spring break and the international break. But we're glad to be back this week.
Yes, we are. And we are going to make a much better effort on the recording front. I think there's a few logistical things that we've been needing to sort out that we really just need to sit down and get done. And then I think once we do that, we'll have a good foundation to keep recording going forward. And we'll just make it run like clockwork after that. So, yep, exciting things. We'll ride out the end of this season. We'll come up with something to do during the summer as well. Maybe we could see a return of the quiz cast. You never know. And then season 5, we'll start off with a bang. So, yeah, we're happy to be back. We will be back more often to fill up your ears. So thanks for coming along with us. We love you all. We hope you're enjoying the Premier League. Stay safe, stay healthy, and it's a goodbye from us.